It's time for From the Shortgrass, presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine with Cray Schapp. A golf podcast for those who love golf, struggle with golf, and just like to enjoy the outdoors and fellowship with friends, all while chasing a ball around, trying to put it in a 4 1/4-inch diameter hole. From the Shortgrass is presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine, and brought to you by Stevens Incorporated, an independent financial services firm with the freedom to focus on what matters most. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotels. We partner with you to deliver high-yield results by managing, developing, and investing in top-quality hospitality assets. And now, from the Shortgrass, here's your host, Cray Schapp.
Welcome to another edition of From the Shortgrass, presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. I am your host, Cray Schapp. At UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine, they are dedicated to keeping you in the game. From sports injuries to joint replacement, they provide world-class care right here in Arkansas. Call 501-686-TOSH to schedule your appointment today and get back to living pain-free. Coming up on this edition of From the Shortgrass, presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine, I sit down with PGA Tour professional Stuart Sink. Stuart Sink, the 2009 British Open champion who lives in Atlanta, Georgia, invited me over to sit down and chat with him at the Georgia Tech practice facility. I did that about 2 weeks ago, and I hope you enjoy part one of a two-part episode with Stuart Sink. That's coming up after the break. Stay with us. At Stevens, our philosophy is to invest every dollar as if it were our own, to seize opportunity, to anticipate rather than react, to deliver constant focus in an ever-changing world, and to pursue the objectives of our clients in order to help them reach their financial goals. A proven history of helping companies and individuals. Stevens, member NYSE SIPC. UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine is taking golf to the next level. As the official orthopedics and sports medicine provider for Razorback Athletics, UAMS Health covers all 19 Razorback sports programs, including golf, and is the official medical partner of the Simmons Bank Championship presented by Stevens. They're also proud to sponsor professional golfers Ken Duke and Glenn Day. Have a golf injury? Call Ortho at 501-686-TOSH to schedule your appointment today. That's 501-686-8674.
Beachwood Pinnacle Hotel Group is the leader in the state in managing hotel properties. From El Dorado to Jonesboro to Fayetteville to Kansas City and back home in Little Rock, you will find a Beachwood Pinnacle managed hotel property. Are you looking for a weekend staycation? Book the Hilton Garden Inn located on Rock Street and enjoy the Agassi 7 rooftop bar with fantastic views of the Little Rock skyline. Open Sunday through Thursday evenings from 4 to 11 and Friday and Saturday from 5 to midnight. Find them on the web at bphotels.com. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotel Group.
Welcome back to this edition of From the Shortgrass, presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. I'm your host, Cray Schapp. Stuart Ernest Sink, born on May 21st, 1973 in Huntsville, Alabama, graduated from Georgia Tech, turned professional in 1995, has 17 professional wins, and his highest ranking on the official world golf rankings, fifth. On January the 6th of 2008, his best result in a major championship, he won the Open Championship in 2009. We'll get to that in our next episode. But in this episode, we talk about Stuart growing up in the state of Alabama, high school golf in Alabama, his recruitment to Georgia Tech, and his early years on the PGA Tour, and having to play with some guy named Tiger Woods. On the tee, Stuart Sink.
Stuart, thanks for joining me on From the Shortgrass. Do you remember the first time you ever picked up a golf club?
No, I don't remember. I have photographic evidence. When I was born, my parents had just started playing golf not too long before I was born, just to have something to do, sort of an activity in common or whatever. And also my mom's dad, so my grandfather was a golfer, so my dad was like, I want to, you know, do that so I can play with your dad, with his father-in-law. So they were new golfers, and I was born. And then I just have a picture of myself with my first club. It was a left-handed six iron.
A left-handed six iron.
I think when I was born, like, and my kids were the same way. They ate and they used a pencil and they colored and everything with their left hand. And so when I was a kid, I must have done the same thing because my parents thought I was lefty. They got me a left-handed six iron, cut the grip down. It was almost all grip. You know, the grip was standard length, and there was about 2 inches of shaft and then the club head. So I had a left-handed six iron. I don't have any evidence or, you know, I don't know when I went over to righty, but apparently at some point I became a righty.
I read where your parents would drop you off at the driving range when you were growing up, a youngster.
That's almost true. We had no driving range at my course, so that part of it's not true. They did drop me off. We moved when I was, that was in Huntsville when we started, when I was born and my parents had started playing golf. I went to kindergarten in Huntsville, Alabama, and then my dad got transferred and got a new job over to Florence, which is out towards Memphis. And so we moved, and there's this little club there. It's a private club, but not like the way you would think, you know, these days. It was like a little, it was much of a more a muni course, but mm-hmm. It was set up like a private club. And my parents joined it. It was a safe environment, small town. And yeah, my parents would drop me off out there on weekends or in summer days. And there was a bunch of other kids doing the same thing. We just putt. We wouldn't hit balls because there was no range.
Yeah.
There was a place to hit balls, a field.
Chip and putt
and have contests with each other. We'd swim. We couldn't go on the course till we were 8. So I had a couple of years there in between of just putting and chipping and swimming and ordering burgers. And I mean, we had a great time. We explored in the woods. I got a lot of ticks.
Yeah.
But we learned every square inch of that place except the golf course. And I would go on Mondays when the club was closed. My dad and I would sometimes go out and play a loop of holes you could do, link together 6 holes. And I got reasonable, you know, at golf just because I was chipping and putting all the time. And by the time I was old enough to go on the course, I didn't really hit it very good. But anytime I got within 50 yards, I was pretty deadly.
Do you remember your first lesson and when that was?
I really don't remember my lessons because I never really took lessons. I did this junior clinic. They had they called it the clinic, and it was like a golf camp on Tuesdays that the pro would come down and teach. And I would just be part of that, you know, and it was fundamentals. I still remember some of the drills, you know, like spring and hold and all this stuff. I could tell them all to you, but it's just because it was imprinted in my brain, and it gave me some solid fundamentals early on. But I wouldn't really call them lessons. My dad also taught me a little bit out of some of the books, like Jack Nicklaus's and Ben Hogan's books, mm-hmm. just little fundamental things like the grip and stuff like that. So I was pretty fundamental. Like I never, you know, guys like Jim Furyk, you know, has a strange looking swing, although it's, you know, pretty phenomenally technically sound. I don't think anybody taught Jim Furyk to do that. I think he just kind of did it because it felt like, oh, I can hit a golf ball like this.
Right.
Well, I think I learned early on, like kind of the basics of like what you should do. And so my swing always kind of looked like a little bit more like what you should do. And I wish the golf ball always knew that, but that's kind of how I got started with lessons. It wasn't really lessons. It was kind of like group camps and stuff like that. And by the time I was like 11, 12, I was pretty good at golf. And occasionally when the pro was busy, he would have me teach the junior clinic. So I taught more than I took.
High school golf, played on the golf team.
Yeah.
It was not much of a team.
No. I mean, Alabama high school golf in the public system wasn't really that big of a priority.
It wasn't cool back then, right?
Nah, it was definitely a side deal. You know, it was something to keep me going. I played other sports too. So, golf was just kind of like, oh, it's there. And the funny thing about Alabama sports was the, state high school golf championship was always at the beach, always mm-hmm. down at Gulf Shores or Mobile down in the South, you know, and always there. So the head football coach was always the one who got to choose like all the secondary sports. You know, they didn't have enough coaches to go around. We didn't have like a full-time golf coach or anything.
Sure.
So the head golf coach was always the head football coach because he knew there was a chance he was going to get an all expenses paid trip to the beach, especially when I was on the team, because I was going to make it to the state championship.
Right.
One way or another. And we did, we made it to the state every year. My sister, incidentally, was a freshman when I was a senior. She was the number 2 player on a boys' team. So we had a lot of sinks on the team. So it was funny, though. I had our football program wasn't great, and I think the coaches would admit that. So I had at least 2, maybe 3 different head coaches when I was in high school because our coaches kept we had a scandal. We had a bunch of losses and some firings. And so anyway, it was kind of a mess.
Crazy high school career for Stuart Sink.
Yeah, it was, like I said, it was definitely not the priority.
Outside of high school, did you play competitively?
A little bit, but we were not allowed to. Like, the rules were not. You couldn't play other events outside your team when you were in season. The rule was written for football and basketball players, but it applied to everybody, you know, because they're in such, you know, great foresight. So, in fact, my senior year, I played an AJGA tournament in Houston in March, and the crosstown coach found out that I played, or maybe it's not hard to find out, in the paper, I played. And he declared me ineligible. So he sat me on the bench, and I was ineligible for my senior year from high school state.
All right, so you're being recruited, and you're looking at colleges, and you settle on Georgia Tech. Why Georgia Tech?
I think Georgia Tech offered the best of all what I was looking for. They had a really good program going first. Puggy Blackman was a coach, and they had a really good player on the team already. David Duvall was the number one ranked player in college, and I felt like that was an opportunity for me to learn from a great player and be a part of a good program. Academics were important. I was a good student. I mean, I made good grades. I was a terrible student. The way I did school, you would never want to do school or teach your kids how to do school, but I made good grades because I could just remember everything.
So how did you do school then?
Well, I had a good memory, and I could figure things out, and I just got around a lot of the work. It's sad, but I just kind of like... I cheat coded it. I didn't cheat, but I cheat coded it.
Yeah.
I just it came to me. It was easy, and... to be honest, it really wasn't that challenging. I was a 4.0 student coming out of high school without doing a lot.
Wow.
Now, when I got to Tech, Tech's a tough place, and it woke me up really fast that I had kind of skated through my high school academics and had to learn how to improve some of my behaviors. And I got my first couple of low grades and was like, whoa, okay. But I was able to adapt to it. And I wasn't like a model student. I didn't make many academic All-American lists or anything. But, you know, I graduated from Tech with a reasonable GPA, got out. But I looked at Stanford. I looked at Auburn and a couple other places that I looked at. Florida and Wake Forest, the scholarship situation just kind of fell apart before other players claimed scholarships.
Mm-hmm.
So it was down to those three. And I took a recruiting trip out to Stanford. I took a trip to Auburn, and I really enjoyed everywhere I went. But in the end, I felt like Tech had the best combination of a good program, athletics, and closer to home. I just don't think I could have survived out in the West Coast.
Yeah, that would probably be a tough place.
Little kid coming from a small town.
Right.
No way.
Right. When you look at Georgia Tech and the advancements that have happened here for the golf program since you were here. I mean, this facility that we are recording this in here in basically Midtown Atlanta was not here.
No, this was athletic department property. I'm sure I'm legally saying that wrong. It, in some way, this land was used by Georgia Tech for athletics. Over the years when I was here, back in the early 90s, this place here was the softball fields. It was different uses over the years, but this all developed back in, I want to say about 9 years ago, this started kind of hatching as a place for golf to kind of get its hands on a facility. Other places were doing it, and it was easy. Georgia Tech's a pretty easy place to negatively recruit against because the traffic in Atlanta is bad, and there's no golf courses really right around here. So the coaches just say, you really want to go there with that city and the traffic and how hard school is? It's just easy to persuade a kid to think elsewhere. So, Bruce Hepler, who's now the coach, he's been the coach since the year I graduated, had this as sort of his dream vision, you know, to sort of fight against that negative recruiting that this needed to happen. And it happened. I think we've had this about 7 years.
I would think the negative recruiting, you could offset that by looking at the golf courses that you do get to play. East Lake. I mean, I think of it as, okay, it's one of the best in the country, if not the world. And there's one about 3 hours away that I believe once a year, Georgia Tech golf team gets to go down and play right off of Magnolia Lane in Augusta National.
Yeah, they do. I think that's been going, as far as I know, it hadn't ended. So yeah, we did. go over there and play. That was awesome, you know, to get to play Augusta National. And I think most of the big programs get a chance to come play it nowadays.
When your first time driving down Magnolia Lane with the golf team, because obviously you hadn't made it to the Masters yet, what was that like? What was that feeling like for you?
It was a mixture because I was excited to play, but we got rained out. So it was a complete bummer. We sputtered getting to a start over there.
So you got no rain check?
No, they don't issue rain check. Can you believe it? No, we got rained out my freshman year, and we had to reschedule, but we did end up playing later on. And knowing you're going to play golf there, I'd only been one time to a practice round, and knowing you're going to go tee it up, it was cool and a little nerve-wracking too, because, you know, the whole mystique of the place is all about the rules and what you can't do, unfortunately. I wish it wasn't like that, but
it's not what you can do, it's what you can't do. You're not allowed to do this.
They briefed us on everything. You know, the coaches did. Our coaches were like, no, don't go over there and mess this up for the next 10 years of our students.
Right.
So, but it was a blast. We had our whole team played, and we actually, the first time we played, we got rained out completely, so we didn't play. We just drove there and we left. The second time we played the first 11 holes and then got rained out on 12T.
Oh, no.
But they made good on it, and we got to come back and play.
Well, good.
Yeah.
Georgia Tech golf has a rich history when it comes to men's golf and the NCAA. So you're a part of that. What does that mean to Stuart Sink?
Well, I just feel like it's a legacy that was left for me when I got here, and it was kind of my responsibility not to tarnish it, but to, you know, kind of increase it. And at the time, you know, when you're in college, all you're thinking about is selfish stuff. You're thinking about, like, I want to play great. I want to get my degree. I want to get out of these study halls and everything and get on with my life. But you got to do it the right way, you know. And Georgia Tech kind of leaves you no choice but to do it the right way. They don't – it is a challenging place to organize yourself and be a – student athlete, and it means something to graduate from here. There's not a lot of shortcuts available to you. So the students that come and choose to play golf here or any sport, or just come and, you know, go to school here, they know, everybody knows what they're getting into, and to kind of come out the other side of the pipe is there's something to be said for that. It's something to be proud of. And so, but yeah, the program they've done in the time since my time here, we never won the national championship, and they've still never won a national championship, but they've contended so many times, it's unbelievable.
Been so close.
So close. And
they have some individual champions.
The current one.
Yeah.
They won last year. The kids from Singapore, Roshi Thai, won the NCAAs last year, but the team event just hasn't fallen our way yet. They might just reel off about 5 out of the next 7.
They might. Stuart, when did you decide that you wanted to try and make golf a career? Turned professional. Was it early on at your time here at Georgia Tech, or was it even before that?
I wasn't early. I never thought of myself as like, I'm going to make it on the PGA Tour. I mean, I watched golf on TV some.
Who did you watch?
Kite was my, actually before high school, it wasn't really Kite. I don't even really remember who my guys that I liked were, but Kite kind of became my role model in golf when Duval, who was my teammate, his senior year, got into the Atlanta tournament in April. I think it might have been the week before Augusta. And through 54 holes, Duval was leading. Like, our teammate, me and these guys are out there watching our teammate lead the PGA Tour event. And on Sunday, he got paired with Tom Kite. And Duval threw up about a 76, and Kite shot 65. And we watched every step of the way, and we were like, look at Tom Kite. Oh my gosh, that guy is like so consistent. And he flushes it, and he's like pin high, and he's just perfect round of golf. Yeah. It was just unbelievable. So that kind of became my like role model, right? That seeing that round and how, and learning about like what makes that happen. You know, you don't just go out there and have a lucky 18 holes. I mean, he worked really hard on his wedge shots. He was the first one to really get into sort of the 100 yards and in yardages. Up until then, we all were like, well, I like to lay up to 80 or 100 yards. Mm-hmm. Those are my shots. Mm-hmm. Tom Kite was like, I don't care if it's 64 or 33 or 100 or whatever. He's like, I'm ready for all of them because that's what I practice. And we just thought like, makes a lot of sense. And we watched it. His preparation, his attitude, his mental like performance during the scope of competition, became kind of like my, that was my role model.
You started out, you know, trying to get to the PGA Tour. There are steps you have to go through. Obviously, Q School is one of them, but Nike Tour for you, and which is now the Korn Ferry Tour. What were those days like where, you know, basically not the full PGA Tour card, but trying to earn that?
Yeah, there's no guarantees, and there's still not. You know, they have this PGA Tour U thing nowadays where if you're like a top player in college, you get some a boost towards getting there, which is great. It should be that way. But we didn't have anything like that except just, you know, sort of your confidence you'd built up. And in my time at Georgia Tech, I got married, and we had our first son, our first kid. So when we graduated, my wife and I, in 1995, we had an almost two-year-old and turned pro immediately, and it was like, okay, I got like a limited window here.
Yeah.
It was important to graduate, both of us, and I just didn't have like a fallback. I mean, I as far as, you know, I knew I wanted to play golf. I had become the college player of the year, so I was like, I definitely had the confidence, and I knew I could compete. I got into the tournament here in Atlanta, four-spotted, made the cut. So all those things were big for my confidence. You know, I was like, I think I can do this. Mm-hmm. So I treated that first summer as I just wanted to have like some status by the end of that year, from June and through December, and went to Q School, and I got the status. It wasn't great. It was Korn Ferry Tour, and it was partial exemption, like a limited type of thing. But the first tournament of the year in 1996, the next year, I had been pro for 6 months, and my first event out on the West Coast was really rainy. I was like the 10th alternate or something, and I was going out there to Monday qualify. The Monday qualifier kept getting canceled. Mm-hmm. So I go to the course on Wednesday to do the Monday qualifier, and one of the local officials comes to me and says, "You can put your clubs away. You're in the tournament now." You
know, wow.
Because I had that many withdrawals, I'd gotten in.
Yeah.
And I lost in a playoff.
Oh.
So I played good and lost in a playoff. But the key was that with the reshuffle, I moved up, and that tournament meant I was going to get in every tournament the rest of the year. No more Monday qualifying. And so I had accomplished my goal of like having status and a place to play. So I saw the Korn Ferry Tour not as a, oh man, I got to do this before I can get on the PGA Tour. I saw this as like, this is awesome. My goal has been accomplished, and I get a chance to test myself the rest of this year. And I went on and I won three times and finished first.
And got your card.
Got my card, and that was it. Yeah, haven't lost it since.
Yeah.
Until actually in 2024, I lost it. Kind of gave it up because you're playing 50. Champions Tour.
Yeah, yeah, you're 51. So yeah, PGA Tour champions, kind of more your flow, if you will, PGA Tour champs as a champions as opposed to the PGA Tour.
Well, I mean, it's more my peer group.
Right.
My flow is still PGA Tour, I think. I still love competing out there and playing against the best. And, you know, golf is just this amazing puzzle.
Do you remember 97 Stewart PGA Tour when all of a sudden here comes this kid from Stanford, Tiger Woods?
Yeah.
What that was like?
And I had played with Tiger as early as when I was 17 in junior golf. So I have to do the math. That would have been around 1990.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the first time I'd ever heard of him, 90. He was 14 and I was 17 and played this big tournament in Dallas. Ended up in the last group on the final day, and when Tiger was in the last group on the final day, and Nota Begay, the three of us.
Okay.
And Tiger won, 14 years old against a bunch of 17-year-olds, national, like the best of the best, you could say. And here I am, you know, hot shot going to Georgia Tech next year, full scholarship, and here's Tiger Woods, 14 years old, and he's already hitting it like 20 yards past us, and he won. I remember him being, that was scrawny kid Tiger. You know, when you see like the highlight from Sawgrass when he does the big fist pump, you know, that was right around that same era.
He had no muscles.
Yeah. It was a little before that. It's because this was still U.S. Junior running.
Okay. Yep.
I don't think he'd won a U.S. An junior yet because I had, I would have heard of him had he won the U.S. AM or U.S. Junior. So this was pre all that stuff, but he was just a kid, you know, and he was already pretty tall, but just he won. He played good. It wasn't like he was like, wow, astonishingly long or anything. He was longer than us, but we weren't that long either. But then 4 years later, he's a freshman at Stanford and I'm a senior and we get paired together at a college tournament. And now Tiger Woods has become like Tiger Woods. He's won all these tournaments and all the highlights. And you're starting to know like something about this guy. And we paired together the first round in, it was in Hilton Head at a college tournament. And the shot he hit off the first tee, I'll never forget the sound of it, because it was like he had changed from a scrawny kid to, he was still kind of a scrawny dude.
Right.
But he now was hitting like 315 in the air. I mean, just like destroyed this ball off the first tee. And this sound was like, I've never heard anything like it. And he played amazing. I think he shot the low score of the day by like four shots. He played just like ridiculously good. And I think he also shot 80 the second day. So it's not like he was perfect
right
already. But you could just tell, like, this is not something I've ever seen before.
Right. I've told people, Stuart, you go to any tournament that Tiger is playing in, go to the range. And when the ball comes off his club, it's just different. It sounds totally different than anything I've ever heard.
Yeah. And I would say the same thing, especially then. You put him on the range and on the PGA Tour with all the best players, it still sounds a little different, you know, and that's saying something, because those guys know how to hit it.
Yeah. So when he came on the tour, obviously purses increased. I'm sure notoriety increased. He, when I say this, I don't want to say it in a weird way, but didn't he make golf cool?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think maybe in the early 90s, it wasn't cool to be a golfer when you're walking around your high school. But then late 90s, early 2000s, if you were a kid playing golf, you were like, oh, hey, man, have you heard of Tiger Woods? You know Tiger Woods? I mean, everybody knew of him.
Yeah, he was he and Michael Jordan at the time were the most recognizable athletes in the world. And he had the fist pumps and he had the name Tiger. And that's another thing. You know, if his name was Steve, it might not have been like, nothing against the Steves out there. But
well, it's a good thing he changed from Eldrick.
That's true. So he had a lot going, you know, he had charisma and he's winning a lot and the flair for the dramatics. Although my opinion is that he didn't have a flair for the dramatics. He just was really good all the time. And he didn't let the moment, like he didn't cower to the moment. So he was just as good during the moment as he was on the second hole in the first round. It's just that we see that as like, you know, a flair for the dramatic,
right?
Like all those putts at Bay Hill, he's just going through his process and the ball happened to hit the hole and at the same regularity that it did on those holes when the pressure wasn't on. And that to me is just a mark of a real champion.
Heading to El Dorado to check out some live music or to play Mystic Creek? Stay at the Haywood, the only boutique hotel in the middle of downtown and the Murphy Arts District. If you are spending a weekend in Hot Springs, make plans now at the Marriott Courtyard close to Lake Hamilton and Oaklawn. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotel Group manages both of these fine properties, and you will rest easy knowing that your every need is taken care of. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotels on the web at bphotels.com.
UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine is taking golf to the next level. As the official orthopedics and sports medicine provider for Razorback Athletics, UAMS Health covers all 19 Razorback sports programs, including golf, and is the official medical partner of the Simmons Bank Championship presented by Stevens. They're also proud to sponsor professional golfers Ken Duke and Glenn Day. Have a golf injury? Call Ortho at 501-686-TOSH to schedule your appointment today. That's 501-686-8674.
Strength is measured not by the number of accounts. Strength is placing value on relationships. It's having the vision and the guts to invest in growth. It's the commitment to responsibly manage your money. At Stevens, we believe that our strengths build success, not only for us, but for our clients. Stevens, member NYSE, SIPC.
That's all the time for this edition of From the Short Grass, presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. I want to thank Matthew Allen and Blair Allen, Beachwood Pinnacle Hotel Group. They know how to manage hotel properties. When you need an overnight place to stay, go to their website, bphotels.com, and make sure you're staying at one of their properties. I want to thank Stuart Sink. He invited me down to Atlanta and the Georgia Tech Golf Practice Facility to sit down for this interview. Part two comes your way in our next episode. Remember, you can always listen to From the Short Grass. If you missed an episode, you can find us wherever you get your podcast. As always, when you find your ball mark on the green, fix it and a couple of more. And I hope to see you sometime soon from the short grass.
You have been listening to From the Short Grass, presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine, a weekly podcast dedicated to the game of golf. This has been a presentation of the Buzz Radio Network. in association with Majestic Cubby Productions.